declare the meeting open. I would like to start this meeting by apologizing for starting late. The reason for starting late is actually transport. So if this committee is unable to start its work because of transport, that is a reflection of what is happening in the entire country. And the answers and the solutions to the problem that is experienced in the entire country lies with this portfolio and this department. That then tells us that we have a lot of challenge. I woke up at 3 this morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, for me to be at the airport in Durban at 5 o'clock, because yesterday there was a mess with my booking. But that tells you what challenges we are faced with if a distance of 87 kilometers requires me to spend an hour on the road. Other members live in the parliamentary villages, and all parliamentary villages are within a 20-minute proximity from Parliament to where the parliamentary villages are. But it takes more than an hour in the morning and in the afternoon to get out and arrive here on time for work. So that is the nature of the problem, and it is not getting better. Also at the airport, the only reason I came before Honorable De Vreester is that I did not have a luggage to pick up. I only had a hand luggage, so I was able to move out fast. He came about 15 minutes after me because he had to wait for his luggage, which then means there is another problem that is happening within the entity that falls under this Portfolio Committee Act. If the bag can delay a person for more than 15 minutes, that is a problem. Collecting a bag. So all I'm saying is that what is happening here gives us a first-hand experience of the problems that we are required to sort out. Having said that, I welcome the delegation from the department, and I would the delegation is led by the acting DDG for Transport Logistics and Corridor Development, Mr. Clement Oli Manyongwane. The DG has apologized, but there is also an understanding between myself and her that it would not be possible for her to lead the delegation even every time the department appears in front of us, because it would mean that she would not be able to do other duties that she is required to do. So DDGs that are responsible for particular branches of the department are informed enough to lead the delegation. And I will hand over to you, Mr. Manyongwane, to introduce your delegation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for the opportunity to come and share what we've been doing with regards to the red environment. My name is Clement Bolidis Manyongwane. I'm the Acting TDG, Transport Logistics and Corridor Development. And on my left-hand side, I have Mr. Godfrey Maluleke. He's the Director of Public Transport. Following Mr. Godfrey Maluleke is Ms. Elsie Nelubalani. She is Director for NETMAP. NETMAP standing for the National Transport Master Plan, which is going to be part of the presentation today. And next to her is Mr. Len Frank Situma, who is the project manager for the National Transport Master Plan. And lastly, next to Mr. Situma, we have Mr. Jack van der Merwe, who is the project manager for Gautrain. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members.
Thank you very much. We have two presentations to consider today. It is the update by the Department of Transport on Gautrain. That is what we had asked the department to come into. But because the Gautrain is part of the master plan or infrastructural development, logistics and corridors, we would first take the presentation on the Gautrain, and then followed by the presentation on the master plan, which will then assist us to understand how the Gautrain fits into the whole master plan. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair. I bring greetings from Gauteng. My MEC, Bekeng Nkosi, sends his regards and says he's very sorry that he can't be here today, but he said I must please give his regards from Gauteng. I've been asked to do an update on Gautrain. So can we start by saying what are we doing at Gautrain? Firstly, Gautrain is currently the largest greenfield rail infrastructure project in the world. The emphasis is on the integration of Gautrain with all existing public transport modes in Gauteng, and the project was voted the best global deal to sign in 2007 by the International Public Finance Association. What are we doing? We are building 80 kilometers of dual railway line, 10 new stations, 205 bridges, about 11 kilometers of bridges, 15 kilometers of tunnel, and we're moving about 7 million cubic meters of material out of the tunnel, crushing them, and then move it back again as building material. So this is a very big project. We are working on 53 construction sites simultaneously. So we will start at Johannesburg Park Station, have the underground station at Park, go underneath the hospital hill, have the underground station at Rosebank, go to Sandton, have the underground station 15 stories below ground level at Sandton, go underneath Ben Schumann and then daylight at Marlborough, station there going at grade to Midrand Station, at grade to Centurion Station, Pretoria Station and Hatfield. The trip from Hatfield to Park Station will take you 38 minutes. And then from Marlborough, we have a commuter link going to Rosefield, and then we have a non-stop Sandton OR Tambo link, which will take you 12 minutes. Technical specifications, safety and security is of paramount importance. This is an international standard gauge, and we'll hear quite a lot about it today. The maximum speed is 160 kilometers per hour. We have 24 train sets based on the Bombardier's Electrostar, and they are totally different from existing rolling stock we have in South Africa. There are different coaches for the commuter line and for the air passengers. We'll run a frequency of between 10 and 30 minutes for eventually a 19-hour day, starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, running up to 12 o'clock at night. This is the train. We are busy testing the train. We have 6 completed train sets operational. It's interesting, we have to do 4,000 kilometers per train set for it to be certified to carry passengers. So we are running these trains at 160 kilometers an hour up and down on our 7-kilometer test track at the moment. This is really a very good-looking train, and the idea is that it gives you the perception of speed, so that this runs next to Ben Schumann, and you will be sitting in your car, and this train is going to come past you, and you're going to think, maybe I made a mistake by being in my car, but the next train that comes past where you're still in the same position you'll know you'd made the wrong mistake, the wrong decision to go by car. We are running with the train, we're running a feeder and distributing services. So the Gautrain bus service is integrated with our rail service. We are purchasing 125 buses. We will run 36 feeder distributing routes spanning 420 kilometers, running in the same timetable. We'll do about 2,200 bus trips per day, 26,000 kilometers of bus services per day. Very importantly, the bus links have to complement the BRT and the bus services in the metropolitan areas, and we are supplying 11,000 extra parking at the various stations. Objective, I thought, Chair, in 2005, November 2005, when Cabinet took a decision that this project could go ahead, these were the objectives, and I think it would be good to look back and say, this is what we've been set to do, and how have we done it. Firstly, developmental goals. We have to grow the economy, development and job creation, and there's quite a lot of information that I'll be giving. Must meet the other goals of government, SMME promotion, business tourism, broad-based black economic empowerment. In our project, normally a public-private partnership contract in the world has got three components, a financial component, a technical component, and a legal component. In our country, we've added a fourth one, which is called socio-economic development, and you'll see this booklet that I've handed out exactly what we've done in line with the socio-economic development goals. Then to promote business tourism by means of the link between the airport and Sandton. Transportation goals, it is very important that we look at the traffic congestion. The Chair's spoken about it. If there's economic growth, the flip side of that is that there will be congestion. There's always a demand for movement of people, goods and services, and if that demand outstrips the supply, then you have congestion. The corridor between Tshwane and Pretoria has been growing steadily by 7% per annum, while the rest of the country grows at about 2.5 to 3% per annum. We have to show government's commitment to the promotion of public transport, the National Land Transport Transition Act and the National Land Act. Now, it has to be a catalyst public transport project, and I think that it has improved the image of public transport with this project and attract more car users to public transport. I think, Chair, the fundamental question we have to ask is that if we in our country say public transport is for the poor, cars are for the rich, then we're never going to win, because then we will have people aspiring to buy a car and to clog up the system further. We are saying buy a car, but don't use it for your peak trips. Use public transport, but then public transport has to be a mode of choice and not a mode of force. To link the Tshwane Ring Rail project, we have a 26-kilometer ring rail within Tshwane, which is a nice legacy, with about 26 stations, and that we've done. It has to be part of a holistic public transport plan and network for Gauteng, and it has to be a catalyst public transport project of national importance. And I think all of these things have been addressed by the Gauteng. This is a very interesting graph, Chair. This shows the traffic on Ben Schoeman coming from Tshwane to Johannesburg in the mornings, and you can see the yellow part is the traffic coming, and this is 2,000 counts. The year 2000, you see there's a peak in the morning going down, and then in the evening there's a peak coming back again. But we've now seen that the highest growth hour in that for the last 5 years has been the hour between 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning. So we now see a whole change in the traffic pattern. As you can see, people are now getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, to get there at 6 o'clock. But then they start coming home. You can see the red has moved quite considerably, so we have congestion on Ben Schoeman starting at about 2:30 in the afternoon running right through. And what we're seeing here is that there's not a peak in the morning and a peak in the afternoon anymore, there's a peak right through. And this has caused trips between Tshwane and Johannesburg to be unpredictable. When you have a meeting, you're either going to be early or late, because you don't know how much time to allow. It could take you up to 2 hours. If the traffic is bad, it can take you up to 2.5 hours to do the trip. The train will do 38 minutes, irrespective of weather, traffic officers next to the road, whatever, it is possible to do that. Very important, this is a flagship public transport project of national significance. This is what we said in 2005. Gautrain is a flagship public transport of national importance. It can be seen as the catalyst to free existing resources or to generate new resources to promote public transport in a holistic fashion. I can just say that the budget for Metro Rail has in the time gone up from about 2 billion rand per year to 9 billion rand a year. So this has really highlighted or generated the debate around public transport. Very important, the need to ensure Gautrain is integrated into the public transport system of Gauteng, promotion of public transport, strategic integration, operational integration, funding strategy and processes, and then the Gautrain governance structure. So what have we done on integration? We have created a public transport integration committee. All the role players in transport in Gauteng are represented on the committee. And again, this is what we are trying to do. We are trying to align the approved national commuter rail plan and the Gauteng implementation parameters. Proposed new public transport links where deemed appropriate. Consider the development of integrated commuter station precincts with a specific focus on Hatfield, Pretoria, Johannesburg, Park and Oakville. These are the stations where Metro Rail interacts with us, and it's a question that you can walk from a Metro train into the Gautrain. Inclusive feeder network services such as Metro Rail Gautrain feeding bus services, local BRTs, subsidized bus services, and recapitalized minibus taxi operations. I can just say, Chair, in Johannesburg, the backbone of the BRT runs from Soweto to Sunninghill north-south and from Alex to Randburg east-west, and where the BRTs meet is on top of our station in Sandton. So you will be able to take a BRT, get off at Sandton and go down the escalators into the train. The same at Rosefield, at Rosebank, the same at Park. We are doing exactly the same. Pretoria, Tswane is a little bit slower with the BRT, but their BRT stations will have interlinks at Pretoria Station and at Hatfield Station and at Centurion. Ticket and fare integration, including a single architecture, integrated ticketing system, and development of a fare integrated strategy. You know, we have technology that we can read each other's tickets, BRT, Metro Rail, Gautrain, operating license strategies for the three metropolitan municipalities, assessing the possibility of transforming the Gautrain rapid railing into a mass transit system, and then accessing the notion of social inclusion. So all of these things we are busy with doing. I can just say that we report directly to the National Minister of Transport, so there is a monthly report, a quarterly report, and then a yearly report on progress. Integration, progress on integration, integrated spatial and land use planning. We thought that the train would be a catalyst for development. We are actually amazed at the amount of developments that have happened around the train station. On a strategic integration level, Rosefield, Park, Pretoria, Loftus and Hatfield stations, we have the integration there with the Praza services. We've actually changed the Rosefield station at the airport so that our station is now like a cross on top of the Metro Rail station. So you would again be able to get off a Metro Rail train, come up the escalator, get into the Gautrain and go on. At Park, Rosebank, Sandton, Marlborough and Midland station, we have integration with the Johannesburg BRT system, Centurion, Pretoria and Hatfield station, integration with the Tshwane BRT system, and then integration with buses, taxis at all stations. Operational integration, we have a trip planner in the Gautrain. This will now be expanded to become the trip planner for the FIFA 2010 movement of the whole of Gauteng, and then automatic fare collection that I spoke about. We have to contribute towards urban restructuring, shortening travel distances, and improving city sustainability. If one talks about the investment in the Gautrain, Old Mutual is presently doing a development at Midrand around the African Parliament. The development is called Lomthazizwe. They are going to do 250,000 square meters of mixed land use. The development cost is 26 billion rand. So although we've paid 25 for the train, it has generated just in one stand investment bigger than that. In Sandton, we have an 80-story office block that's being built to the eastern side of the station. Similar plans are afoot on the northern side of the station, so there has been an absolute explosion of developments around the stations. Stimulate the renovation and upliftment of the Joburg and Tshwane CBDs, and then to link the main economic nodes. I've just quoted some urban planning literature Architect Africa Online said, towering cranes around the future Gautrain station mark the property sector's confidence. Areas located directly around future Gautrain stations are attracting great interest when it comes to property development, especially speculative offices, retail and mixed land use property development. As Fran of Property Group points out, that the speculative development taking place in these locations show confidence in Gauteng's future by the property sector and symbolizes the important role that the Gautrain stations are expected to play in our society. Financial Mail: developers in Rosebank should be encouraged to go residential. There is no obvious recession in Rosebank. The Joburg suburb is rapidly becoming the city's third high-rise business center after Sandton and the regional CBD, as South Africa's biggest developers prepare for the launch of the Gautrain and the city's bus rapid transit system next year. So again, transport here is the catalyst for development. We've seen it all over the world. We've seen it in countries like London, where the Docklands development has been opened just because that they put in the Docklands light rail system. So in conclusion around this section, Chair, the project in the black box, which should stimulate economic growth, investment, new developments and job creation. We have up to date created 63,000 jobs. We have grown the economy. We have stimulated all the economy in Gauteng. In the red box, the land use, restructuring urban areas, reducing travel distances, time and cost, and improving city sustainability, and I think that is working very well. And in the green blocks, the promotion of public transport, the development of SMME and broad-based black economic development, tourism, and then business development. So I think up to now, I think it's been a good scorecard. If one looks at the funding, we have five sources of funding, which is quite unique. We have the DORA, the Division of Revenue Act. Money from central government goes via the Department of Transport, and you will know that the Cabinet took a decision in 2005 that national government would pay 50% of the project. So 50% of the cost comes through DORA. We have through our MTF from the Gauteng provincial government. We have private sector equity. We have private sector borrowing. And we have provincial borrowing. So these are the five sources of funding. This is just a pie chart to show we will borrow about 18% of the money. MTF 26%, the Division of Revenue Act 44%, equity 1.8%, and then private sector debt about 10%. Around this, I have four billion rands worth of private sector sureties, and then around this, I have then the operational money for the next 15 years. Expenditure current month 54 months development period. Expenditure to date has been 16 billion rand. Financial close amount was 25 billion rand. Our concession agreement is a fixed price, fixed scope, fixed time concession contract. So this is a fixed price that cannot change. And I keep on being asked questions about what is the estimated cost at completion. It is very important that public-private partnership regulations in terms of the PFMA and the authorizations must be followed. The TA3 authorization has specified expenditure cap on capex expenditure, a cap on operational expenditure, and so the question is, how can this project cost more? We signed a deal for 25 billion rand. What could make it become a more expensive project? The first is if there's an increase in our foreign currency, in Forex, but we, as a project, we have got forward cover, so we are neutral to any foreign currency fluctuation. Increase in the CPIX, we have in our model allowed for what was then predicted by the Reserve Bank to be the CPIX. We just made the difference. That amount is about 300 million and more now because of the escalation that has gone up. The variations orders, if we say to the concessionaire, do something else, and then possible claims from the concessionaire. So these are the four items that can increase the cost, but nothing else. I think it's very important that we look at our SED. What we've done is that we've developed a so-called SED strategy, and this has now become the benchmark for all public-private partnerships in the country. We are saying our philosophy is sustainable investment in the people to grow the economy, and it focuses on two important concepts: local skills development and capacity building, and then job creation. Under local skills development and capacity building, we have broad-based black economic empowerment, equity participation by black people and black women in the project on the equity level, and then procurement from BEEs, subcontracting to BEEs, and establishing new BEEs. Development of the SMMEs, sustainable development of underprivileged communities, and to maximize local content. On job creation, employment equity, we have employment of HDIs, women and people with special needs, HDIs and women in management positions. And what we've done, Chair, you know, I've been in construction for 37 years, and you always find that you have a plan, and then they don't do it. They tender for creating so many jobs, and then after the contract, we have a long explanation why we didn't do it. What we've done here, we've said, these are our goals. If you don't achieve it, the fine is 70 million rand per 3 months. So you can't tender for doing it and then just pay the fine. It will be, you will, the concessionaire will be bankrupt. What now has happened is that the concessionaire is so scared, and maybe let's not put it negatively, the concessionaire is so optimistic to fulfill its requirements, they are now overperforming in what they should do. So we have an independent socio-economic monitor, which monitors this. It's jointly appointed by us and the concession company, and it's independent verification of the performance. Our SED commitments, we have 21 elements, and they are in six clusters: procurement and subcontracting, local content, black enterprise and equity participation, participation in management, direct employment and training. And we have, through the tender process, got the best possible deal. Now, if one looks at the deliverables, it's given us opportunity to do empowerment. Ombala has made extensive efforts to ensure that it has substantially exceeded its SED obligations each quarter within each with of the respective elements, and this is being described. So what we've done, we have 11,700 direct jobs were created, sustained from a project activity. So these are the people that are on site on a daily basis. The project activities resulting in the creation and sustainment of a further 51,500 indirect jobs at suppliers and reduced jobs due to the increased economic inclusion. So as we stand today, we have an estimated total of 63,200 jobs that we've created. We have Black Equity. We've created a Black group, SBG, Strategic Partner Group, and they hold 25% share. So right on the equity side of the project, SPV, the SBG group, holds 25% share in the concession company, the turnkey contractor, and the operating company, and then a 10% share in the civil and electrical and mechanical contractors. So if one looks at procurement, procurement from BEEs, the number of entities are 260. The obligation was up to today to have spent 1.3 billion rand on BEEs, and we have spent 1.8 billion rand. So it's about a 50% overperformance. New BEEs, we rate a BE company that's been in existence for less than 3 years as a new BE. 19 new BEs we helped establish. We should have spent 630 million rand, and we have spent 780 million rand. SMMEs, this is quite an exciting thing. Remember, you must have a turnover of less than 25 million rand to be classified as an SMME. We have helped 230 SMMEs. We should have spent 180 million rand, and they've spent 590 million rand. Job creation, HDIs, the obligation was 4,900, and we've actually employed 10,500. Women employment should have been 368. We're now at 835. People with disabilities should have been 49. It's now 63. Local content, South African material, plant and equipment should have been 980 million. We're now at 1.2 billion. Local people employed 6,600, now it's 11,500. We've spent another 36 million rand on human resource development. Unskilled and semi-skilled staff attended 10,390 courses, and all of these are accredited courses, so they get certification. Management staff has attended more than 1,250 training courses, and 160 women participating in a focused women training program. National Skills Fund, I've been given 25 million rand from the National Skills Fund. So we have, in addition to what Bombala was training, we have trained 2,357 individuals, 9,400 training interventions assessments, 352 learning ability battery assessments. And we have three apprentices starting electrical and mechanical training at Nexus Center. I think we have made quite a huge impact on ACD in Gauteng, and this has really become the benchmark for future projects. Just a few slides on lessons learned, and I think this is going forward, that if one wants to duplicate what we've done on the train, the first one is the creation of the Gauteng Management Agency, the single point of accountability. It has a board of directors directly reporting to the MEC. So this is in terms of the PSMA public entity, class 3C public entity. Contract form, we have a public-private partnership contract, although it's a fixed price. There's one sentence in the contract that says, you will build this project for 25 million rand. It's a very complex document. It's 100,000 pages. So if you want to read the whole thing, contract document, you would need a few months to do it. It's very difficult to handle variations because there's not a price breakdown. The composition of the concessionaire, equity, if we had it over again, I would have most probably pushed up the equity. And the operator is not an equity holder. The operator is just a contractor. So these are things that in the future you could look at. We have linked the project to an external event, the FIFA 2010 Soccer World Cup. Remember, the Premier announced the project in January 2000, and in April 2004, 4 years later, we awarded the soccer. This has put added pressure on the project and places the government at a disadvantage in negotiations with the concessionaire because they know we would like to make it. The scope of work must be well defined. Interaction and cooperation with third parties is essential. We are working in a most densely populated and expensive area in Africa, so we have to cooperate with a different people. We have, as an example, 1,200 properties that were affected by the train. We have 800 utilities that were affected by the train. Very important, I think this is a lesson that we've learned from the BRT side, is there should be continuous consultations. It doesn't help that you consult and you sign it off, because it takes you years and years before you actually open the doors to it. So there's this question of how do you keep continuous consultation going throughout the life of the project. See, I can just say that these projects usually take 14 years to develop these projects in the world. So from the moment somebody decides to dream they're going to do it until the president cuts the ribbon, it's 14 years. So this continuous consultation is a big challenge. The challenges of integration, the strategic integration on the infrastructure side, once you start building, you're actually fixed to the plan. Operational integration is really where the opportunities lie. And important in our country, ticket integration is a mechanical thing. We can develop the technology to do it. What we need is fair integration. We need to be able to say if somebody buys a ticket for 100 rand and he wants to do a trip which is 800 rand, then how do you get that money flowing? How do you sort out the subsidies for public transport? EIA process, the whole environmental issue, it has taken us 2 years longer than what we thought it would take us. So if one does this type of work, you have to allow for EIA. And then once you've done the whole record of decision, environmental management plan, how do you ensure compliance to the environmental management plan? I've spent maybe 30% of my time on court cases. It's taken to court litigation, and it's a very time-consuming thing going to court, and a very expensive. Technical challenges, the tunnel, we've built 15 kilometers of tunnel underneath Johannesburg, and it's quite impressive to walk underneath the Sandton City and stuff like that, 15 stories below ground. The Dolomites in Centurion has turned out to be very expensive. It's a very difficult thing to do. And then, you know, we have created a competent team to manage the process, in-house and consultants, local and international. It's been done at quite a cost to government, and how do you retain this expertise, this pool of expertise? I was fortunate. I have, as a consultant in England, I have Rothschild, who does the financial model. I have Sir Alexander Gibb, who does the technical stuff, and I have Mason, which is on the legal side. But I can tell you, I have in South Africa a legal firm called Ladwaba Mazwai, and they run rings around these guys in England. I'm telling you, they're three times better than what they are. So we should be proud of what we've done, but how do we keep that team in place? Challenges of the Green Schools project, we have to develop a public sector comparator. What will it cost? But you have nothing to compare it to, so it becomes quite difficult. And then obviously ridership predictions are very difficult for something that has never been done before. Acceleration costs to open the airport link in time for the Soccer World Cup. We are busy with negotiations there, and we'll see what the concession company will do, and then possible future plans. How do you prepare a single point contract of 100,000 pounds? How do you protect it against claims from the concessionaire? So, Chair, I usually put this up as a joke, but I'm starting to worry if this is true. If you do a project of this size, it goes through 7 stages. We start off with enthusiasm, promises and programs, disillusionment and panic. We're not there yet, but then the nice things kick in. It's hunt for the guilty, it's punishment of the innocent, and then finally it's reward for those that have nothing to do with it. So, Chair, this is a project. This is our website. When I put this up, Minister Jeff Kwadebe said to me, I'm wrong. It wasn't Karl Marx that said it, but it's attributed to Karl Marx. He said the philosophers have only interpreted the world, the point of it is to change it. So it's really to take plans into action. And if you can quote a communist, you might as well quote a capitalist. Ronald Reagan said the future is not for the faint-hearted. So we have to write it. This is our website. Chair, if you allow me 2 minutes, I'll just run through the photographs that you don't have, just to show you what we're doing. This is the Johannesburg Park Station. We exploded that imploded the one block, the whole block there. We built the train underground. We will cover it up, and then we'll build a 8-story parking garage on it, and this just links into Park Station. This is our tunnel work going underneath the hill there. This is Rosebank Station. This is now the concourse being built underground. This is our tunnel boring machine that does the tunnel boring and does the lining as it goes along. They are just dismantling the tunnel boring machine there. Sandton Station. This is our 15-story deep Sandton Station. What I think is very great about this, we've borrowed this property from Joburg. We built the 15-story parking garage, 3 levels of station, 3 levels of parking, a modal integration facility. We put a slab on top and we give it back to Johannesburg. So Johannesburg will then develop on top of that again. This is inside the Sandton Station, down underground. This is busy doing the finishing of that. Sandton Station on the top level of parking. This is the tunnel going to Marlborough. We have emergency shafts every kilometer. We have a shaft that we can move people out. So these are the different shafts being built. This is the Marlborough portal going. This is where we daylight coming out. This is the Marlborough station. You can see the houses on the left with Alex. This is a video which is not here. This is the Marlborough station with Park and I. They're busy building that. That's in train depot. This is where the trains sleep. You see on the top there is our precast yard, the biggest precast yard in Africa. This is in the depot where we service our trains, just the trains in the train station. This is where the Zonkazeeswe development of Old Mutual is. That's the station, and all at the back there would be the Zonkazeeswe. This is one of the bridges going towards Pretoria, Centurion Station. This is the viaduct running past the cricket there. And this is our launching girder. These are the segments that we build the bridges with. Pretoria Station, this is going across the Nelson Mandela, the Pretoria Station itself, the constructed Hatfield Station, this is just an artist's impression of the big park and ride that is being built there. This is the airport link going towards the airport, Roadfield Station. You can see there crossing below the station is the Metro Rail system. This is the station actually being built, and you can see Metro Rail is at the bottom, and Metro Rail has given out a contract to build that station. This is the link going into the airport. This is going into the airport. This is and this is where we'll go. You'll go out of the train into the main concourse. This is one of our bridges in Gene Avenue. That is the life. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you very much. We will now take a presentation on the master plan and then come to the
thing we have is the problems, and then the project approach progress to date. I am trying to get what you call a technical solution to a technical problem. We look for technical solutions to technical problems. That is between Joburg and Tshwane in the year 2050. If we depend on the vehicles, our philosophy can hear. No, dear person, this paper was prepared in Beijing. Last night, I've been briefed on the magnitude of the problem that you want to present. I decided that I must make a complete presentation. And that's what you're seeing. What you have is part of this information.
Our philosophy, transport is the heartbeat of the economy. You pay for a good transport whether you have it, you have got it or not. NetMap is a 42-year journey and not an overnight event. So we must start now and not tomorrow. Slow but sure wins the race. Lack of vision and planning kills the nation. The NetMap 2050 is making the Republic of South Africa a land use transport integrated planning society. NetMap 2050 is not a study, but a bigger picture crystallizing all facets of transportation for gradual and sustainable implementation. The slides here shows the different modes of transport. We have the buses and bikes on the far left top, and we have the bridge somewhere in between, and you see the rail line. We also have the ports on the left. We have aviation on the right, and we have the taxis on the bottom left, and we have freight in the middle, bottom middle, and livestock next to the railway line on the far bottom right. The problems that we want to highlight is poor land use, transport integrated planning, poor rural accessibility, especially in predominantly rural areas of this country, uncoordinated implementation of multi-sectoral land use committed developmental mega projects, financing of transportation systems, infrastructure facilities, rolling stock and equipment competing with other public services sectors like health, education, housing, water, etc., for diminishing financial resources, infrastructure civil engineering problems, substandard secondary road networks and blockage, absolute railway infrastructure network, rolling stock and equipment, infrastructure maintenance deterioration, the R26 in Free State, and institutional fragmentation. This is a slide that shows the land use again. The demography, this is shows the population in the country. This is the rail network. As it is currently, the cost ineffective infrastructure facilities with massive civil engineering problems. You can see the rail lines where they are not being utilized and not properly maintained. The problems, again, we see the obsolete railways infrastructure facilities and rolling stock. You could see the rail line with some very low standard maintenance. This is what we have currently. This is the same old rolling stock that we had during those old days. The future, Gautrain standard gauge, that is 1435 project in progress. We have Muloto Rail Corridor Development Initiative on standard gauge 1435 approved by Cabinet last year, project in preparation stages. And the SADC November 2008 Kampala, Uganda, SADC, COMESA, and EAC agreed to standardize the railway network to enhance future trade and movement amongst the people. The EAC, the Development of Master Plan 2015, Uganda approved the construction of 1,990 kilometers. And Rwanda, 100 kilometers, Ethiopia, 620 kilometers, Southern Sudan, 490 kilometers, Kenya, 3,180 kilometers, operational in 12 years. Countries to be served include Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Southern Sudan, Rwanda, DRC, Ethiopia, and Somalia. The average speed passengers between 120 and 160 kilometers per hour. For goods or freight is 100 and 120 from 22 days to 16 hours between Mombasa and Kigali. What we're saying here is that it used to take 22 2 days to transport goods from Mombasa to Kigali. But after this, it only takes 16 hours. So you can imagine the different time. 11 June 2009, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania on their concurrent budget days announced the commencement of building a standard gauge, that's the 1435 railway network across East and Central Africa. The AU in 2007, Johannesburg, South Africa, transport ministers responsible for railways commented that member states should in future build new railways, new lines on standard gauge. The Gautrain already on the dot, DOT strategic plan, as you have seen the details on the Gautrain project. The ultimate challenge, the NetMap 2050 gradually moved to the dominant railway gauge and state-of-the-art technology. The Johannesburg, Durban, and Musina Cape Town corridors are potential lifelines of our economy into the future. PRASA has requested NetMap 2050 to quantify the impact of such a shift, taking cognizance of Gautrain and Muloto Railway Corridor project. The draft is completed. And the bullet train of Japan is a high speed similar to what we're looking forward for to implement in the country. The German rail tilting train IC-110 is a critical stakeholder. Transnet Engineering can do it. The problems: infrastructure and overloading, abnormal control. This is the type of freight we see in our roads. And the infrastructure maintenance deterioration, R26, it was identified in 2006. And for now, to arrest problems, we need approximately 54 billion per annum required for the next 5 years. This is the N11 in Mpumalanga. The MLO side is the N11, and which the problem was identified also in 2006, and this is due to the heavy loads that move between the mines and around the MLO. This is the same N11 in Siyabuswa in Mpumalanga, and this is the condition of the road currently. These are the rural roads in Limpopo. This is the bridge that collapsed in Limpopo sometimes last year, and it's still in the. We had a report that the situation is still as is after about 12 months. It's the continued state of our roads in the country, our rural roads. This road is just tend to be a swimming pool. These are two-wheels, non-motorized transport. You could see that these people are trying to make business, and it's in Tanzania. The bananas are from Uganda. Are in Uganda? This is in Soweto. Local transport and the environment. Transport distracting the environment, and it's also transport's role to minimize the environmental degradation. This is the project that the department built in the K-Ray in Matlia in the Eastern Cape, trying to save the indigenous trees and trying to allow the business access to transport their freight. There's the forest, and there's a plantation, and this old person has to move his goods from the farm to the city or to the for transportation. Oh, the NetMap project approach. The NetMap has been divided into nine regions based on the provincial boundaries, and is also implemented in phases. We have the phase one, that is the status quo, reporting on the current situation as is in the country, and phase two is the analysis of the status quo, and we have phase three, which is forward planning or projection. Phase four is agenda for action, and it will have a five-year development plan. Three consortia was appointed. We have Eurocon, and it was known as Africon before. It's responsible for Free State, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. We have Stuart Scott, responsible for Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, and Angerop, responsible for Gauteng and Limpopo. The project approach, it starts with the inventory or data analysis, that is phase one, for all transport infrastructure, road, rail, air, and ports, and also for land use, economic ability, and the population. I think it's we know that for any planning to take place, you need to know the population that you want to address. So that's what the status quo and the type of infrastructure we have for all modes of transport. And then we had phase two. That's the future vision and forecast. So we developed models, try to understand the land use, economic activity, population and infrastructure capacity. Phase three is forward planning, as we mentioned, project planning on road, rail, airports, and critical projects that we have identified. And the phase four is the action for agenda. It talks about the institutional, the policies, programs, projects. Here we tend to say that there might be a change in policies. NetMap will propose changes in policies when necessary in the interest of developing a better transport system for the country and identifying projects that will be implemented on a five-year basis following the lifespan of Parliament. The deliverables to date, we had a roundtable for phase one, and now we have the phase one report is completed. We had a roundtable for phase two, and phase two reports are completed. We are currently finalizing phase three, that will be followed by a roundtable, and phase four, we're hoping that it will be finalized by December this year, and then we'll have also a roundtable for phase four. The progress to date is what we have saying on the deliverables. Provincial phases one and two are complete, and national phase one is complete. Critical stakeholders roundtable phase one and two has been done. The impact of high-speed technology on commuter rail passenger transport on our urban and intercity networks, the gradual introduction of a wider railway gauge with special focus on our mega economic corridors like the Johannesburg-Durban corridor has been completed. Interim GIS and database and the base year model 2005 calibration has been completed. This is a summary of the key results based on population and economic focus and the scenario-based economic focus. This is the population growth based on the economic focus that we use developed by. Oh, this is the population growth for different provinces. You can see how saying with a high population anticipated on 2050 and KwaZulu-Natal following and Western Cape being the third and Eastern Cape following as the fourth, but with a decrease of population in the 2050, especially for Eastern Cape, due to the fact that it's anticipated that people will move due to urban-rural migration. This is the population projection from now till 2050. And the national issues is the financial, legal, institutional management. There's unclear and overlapping responsibilities. And planning authorities have no implementation authorities. Efficiency of parastatals and monopolies. Limited human resource and funding capacities at local and provincial level. Over-regulation and duplicating legislation. The national issues is the environment, energy and environmental issues. Energy security in context of rising costs, food security versus energy, biofuel production, need for minimizing environmental impact, resulting constraints on infrastructure use. The conclusion, there are encouraging signs that actions are being taken to address the listed issues and concerns. Those public transport strategy and action plan, the PRASA, or the former SARTC, Passenger Rail Master Plan, Transnet Rail and Ports Master Plan. However, plans for different modes are not integrated and optimal balance between modes have not been determined. The main concerns are, however, not about infrastructure or infrastructure plans, but about institutional, operational, and policy implementation shortcomings. The 1996 policy paper recognized that prevailing institutional fragmentation was detrimental and counterproductive. It is time for a radical decision to eliminate the fragmentation. Recommendation building on challenges. From NITMAP, it is evident that certain radical changes must now be made in order for the transportation sector to meet its national, regional, continental, and global obligations. To this effect, there is an urgent need for, number one, a homogeneous, inclusive, and interactive institutional establishment for all facets of transportation, a cost-effective and pragmatic integration and implementation of transportation policies, planning, and operations, a sustainable solution of organizational and jurisdictional barriers to maximum utilization of existing and new infrastructure facilities, rolling stock, and equipment, an integrated provision of new public transport infrastructure facilities with land use decision that encourages development of growth points, a seamless coordination between different transportation modes and land use development through socio-economic development programs, the establishment of a national transport central planning agency to harmonize multimodal planning, implementation, maintenance and operations, and feed the National Planning Commission. An expeditious implementation of vertical separation of transport infrastructure facilities from transport operations in railways. The establishment of fully functional national central data bank to ensure availability of demand and supply data required for forward planning and implementation. The question is, for how many years can we see and not hear? Hear and not see what we are moving into the future backwards. This is from the business news on infrastructure blocking growth. Thank you.
Thanks. First, let me just apologize for the presentation because the presenter is not feeling well. Probably the voice. But in a nutshell, NetMap is a 50-year plan that has been adopted by the department. What is going to happen over on the NetMap, on the faces that they talk to, is we've mapped the travel patterns from passengers. We've mapped the flow of freight, which is goods transport, within the freight environment. So that is basically what has happened. If you look into, and again I must apologize because the presentation was changed yesterday, but if you look into the copies of the presentations that you have, it would basically give you percentages of the number of people and the movement patterns that happen. On the freight side, there's a growing need for us to intensify infrastructure requirements on the northern eastern side of the country, which is from Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and then the KZN area. So there's a red flag there in terms of the infrastructure that's required. And once again, NetMap has gone a corridor approach for both passenger and freight, where they prioritized the Durban-Gauteng corridor for standard gauge. And to follow would be your Johannesburg to Messina on the Zimbabwe corridor, and then you have the last one, the third one, which would link with your Moloto rail corridor. So that has happened in a nutshell. But however, there's a process that's linked between our 50-year planning horizon with Transnet. If members might know that on the passenger side, we have direct responsibility as a department. On the freight side, Transnet reports to public enterprises, but we develop strategies and policies for intervention. So there's a current roadshow that Transnet is undertaking to develop their rail plans, which we inputting on that. But our view on that consultation process is that those plans, as they are currently, only focuses on the current operational efficiencies. There's no room for new infrastructure to be built in those particular plans. So we have made an input to say those plans should go beyond the current status quo and plan for new technology in terms of rolling stock and infrastructure for freight rail transportation. So that is basically in a nutshell what NetMap has done. But subsequent to that is that the pictures that members through you have seen on the deterioration of roads, we're beginning to mitigate that impact by aligning those roads that have been shown, which are secondary road networks, with any rail infrastructure that's needed alongside those particular roads, whether existing or future infrastructure. So jointly again with Transnet, we have a list of priority rail networks that we've agreed on, which is basically located alongside the roads that have been killed by overloading. And lastly, we have a departmental view that we need to review our axle load mass limits in the sense that to deal with the issue of overloading, we need to reduce the current axle mass limit. It's about nine axle per ton. We want to go down to eight, for example. So basically, those are the mitigating factors that we're beginning to address through the NetMap. So I just wanted to give a clearer picture of our 50 years going forward in terms of rail infrastructure for both passenger and freight, unless there are questions, Honorable Chairperson, which we'd gladly like to answer for both presentations.
Thank you. Before I give to members to ask questions, I want to explain to the department how we think and how we evaluate the progress and the impact of whatever program that is implemented by a government department. First of all, we look at how the project will improve the social and economic conditions of the people, and how the project will also assist in narrowing the gap between the rich and the poor, because South Africa has got two worlds. There's a first world South Africa and a third world South Africa. And any government intervention should seek to narrow the gap between the poor and the rich, which is the creation of the apartheid government. That is the legacy we are dealing with. The third issue that we look at is the alignment of different government interventions. The program should tell us how what is being done by the Department of Transport speaks to what is being done by the Department of Agriculture, in as far as the agrarian revolution is concerned. It should not be a program that is a nice to do program, but it should be a program that seeks to address the imbalances that exist in our communities. We also become very critical in analyzing the type of training and the kind of skills that are being developed. To us, the numbers don't count. What counts is the relevance of the skills in as far as the socio-economic development agenda of the country is concerned. More than often, service providers are awarded work to train without establishing the needs either of a local government or a provincial government in terms of the skill shortage in a particular area. Then the training becomes an empowerment to the service provider rather than an empowerment to the people that do not have skills. We are also very critical in wanting to understand how the training and the job creation relates to reducing dependency of the poor on government. Does the selection criteria speak to the indigent register of a local municipality in the area? Does the training criteria relate to the social grant register so that we can begin to see a reduction in households that are dependent on government for their survival. Because government is not there to feed people. Government is there to create conditions that would enable people to feed themselves. So that is how we view any developmental approach or any intervention that is presented to us. Even if you are talking infrastructure, that infrastructure has to speak to the social and economic conditions. So, and these are not easy answers, because some require a coordinated approach between various departments. I will now give the opportunity to members to ask questions, but in your answers, try and give us an indication of how what you are doing relates to what we have just said now. Thank you. Honorable Farah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to go back a little bit with the Gautrain project, and I'm sure Jack van der Merwe will know what I'm going to ask him here, because clearly the concern that we have as somebody who has oversight over a large quantity of the funding that goes into that project is the whole aspect of escalation. Now, on the 8th of November 2005, when he came and spent a couple of days with us here, on one of his statements and slides on page 27, if he wants to make reference to it, he said that it must be emphasized that the bid received from the preferred bidder is a fixed price lump sum contract, which means that after financial closure had been reached on 2005 in December, there will be no future cost increases. Which tells me, as somebody that was actually inquiring about that specific thing, that even the implications of hedge of foreign exchange changes that's been hedged for, CPIX, which I believe at the time when I asked the question was said to be averaged out at 30%, which is way above any of the CPIXs that have existed since 2005, that would be it. Now, we started off with 21.5 billion. We are now sitting at 25.1 billion. I just want to find out, for once and for all, what is the cause of this? There has been some extravagance to the sense that we are aware of, in the sense that properties that were online, that were expropriated, have been paid enormous prices for, and hence, I should imagine, has a major impact in the market in the sense of those properties going for far more than what they were even worth. And I just want to get a feel and a handle on that side of things, if you don't mind. That's the first question. The second thing, which is an old hobby horse, is this whole aspect of integration. In the initial report, which I might add was determined as not to have any bid implications towards the 2010 World Cup. So we mustn't come there and go and argue that issue. There has been some escalated costs which have been necessary now to be able to complete for the bid. In other words, to get it done by 2010, which I'm quite happy to see happening because I know there's going to be a need for it. But what is the actual implications of those increased costs on the construction costs of the, let's say, the ORT Sandton link to have it completed? And does that impact on the model? Because at the end of the day, as the chairman rightly said, the actual cost of the fare is going to be the matter as to whether people jump on that plane or not, on that track. If the thing is going to be now modeled around an increased cost, and its ridership now is going to be considered over the cost of the fare, then I think we need to know. Because the concern I have, and the committee had at the time, is that there is a basis of this particular risk which has now been set at a certain ridership. If the ridership isn't reached, the government ends up paying the subsidy. The difference between the level of ridership, which I think was set at 60,000, and if it doesn't achieve that, then we as government have to pay now the operator for the difference between that and what they do not achieve in terms of ridership. And that is a major concern, because we don't know to this day what is going to be the popularity of the train once it comes into being. There is a psychological barrier that we believe that the South Africans need to change to move from car to get onto the train. And the thing that's going to encourage that is either going to be that it's going to be affordable, number one, and secondly, that it's going to be better for that person in both time and money to be able to get on that plane, or that train, I beg your pardon, knowing that you're going to get to the other end safely. Those are the criteria which I think are important. We need some answers about. So that whole model, as I see it, might be changing. And I'd like to know now from Mr. van der Merwe what the cost per kilometre is now being. From the 57 cents, I think that was determined in the beginning, what are we going to pay for those fares now? And lastly, Madam Chair, if I may ask, what is going to be the final outcome vis-a-vis the number of jobs that are offered? Now, it's all very well saying that we've got 160,000 jobs being done, but they are peacetime jobs, short-term contract jobs. And being an engineer, I know what it means that you'll start something, and then when the contract finishes, you're out of work. We want to know what maintenance programs are going to involve those BEEs and those SMEs in terms of future opportunity. And I think that is very important to ensure that we've actually spent 25 billion rand, and what is it costing us to get those jobs established as permanent jobs in this country? Good jobs, which mean that they'll be there for a long time. If I could just ask one more question, which I asked last time and we never got an answer for. This particular structure of this company, with the French part of it and the Canadian part of it and our Marion Robbins construction part of it, and then there's a strategic partnership group which involves the empowerment arm. That has 13 companies in it. Now, we asked at the last meeting that we met with you to get a breakdown of what those particular companies and their shareholders are. Because as members of Parliament, we have a role to play in oversight and to ensure that there's no conflicts of interest in terms of possibly members of this Parliament or anybody else in government who might have shares in that. And if we don't get that answer, then we have to go and scrutinize it by a different means. And I'm asking, please, again, for the second time, could we have the breakdown of who's who in this particular consortium so that we know who we're dealing with? Thank you very much, Madam.
Thank you. It's a number of questions. I will give the department to respond to the questions before I take the second round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Can I come back and start off by saying the project has got a financial model. We have to predict what is going to happen in the next 20 years. The only way that we can predict is to use the Reserve Bank of South Africa's numbers. So in our financial model, the CPIX, as predicted by the Reserve Bank, was used. Now, any contracts in South Africa, the 11 soccer stadiums that are being built, are all subject to escalation. It's a fact of life. The member says he's an engineer, he knows that it is a fact of life, that escalation is something that we do. All that we're saying, in the case of the train, we've allowed for the escalation as predicted by the Reserve Bank. We have to pay the difference. So if the escalation is higher than what was predicted by the Reserve Bank, we have to pay. If it's lower, we make a gain. So that's, and it was never said that the escalation is 30%. Never. The escalation in this country, as predicted by the Reserve Bank, its documents, it was between 4.5% and 5.5%. We are now running at escalations between 7.5% and 8.5%. So the difference is for the account of the project. We will know for sure when the project is finished what the impact of escalation is, but that is a fact of life in any construction work that you have to do. Again, can I state there are two numbers. The project cost 25.1 billion rand. It's never changed. That's the cost. But there's a component which is paid by the private sector, and there's a component which is paid by the government sector. So it depends on which way you do it. You will remember Minister Manuel in his mini budget speech in November 2005 said that the contingent liability for government would be 21 billion rand. That's exactly what it is. 21 billion rand is the contingent liability of government. The total contract amount is 25 billion rand. The properties.
We have 1,200 properties that were affected. We have in South Africa sworn valuers that are professional people that work in the private sector. When you want to buy a house, when you want to get a loan from the building society, they are the people that do the valuation. These are the people that have evaluated the properties, and based on the evaluation, that's what we've paid them. We have never paid an inflated price for the properties. We've paid the price which the professional valuers of South Africa told us is what it is. So we have a list of valuers, and they've paid the price. So I don't know whether we've paid a huge amount. On integration, I agree with the member, if we have to pay additional money to get to the soccer, it is for this government to make a call whether it's worth the money. We are busy negotiating with Kombala, and if they say it will cost X to reach the soccer, and that X amount of money is not affordable or value for money, we will not do it. What we are doing as an alternative, we have a bus plan, because remember, in the total soccer plan, we have to move fans from the airport to the hotels, but we have to move them from the hotels to the stadiums. So there's a complete transport plan. The role of the Gautrain is to move people from the airport to the hotel. So if we can't move them by the train, we'll move them by buses. So we have a separate tender running on the buses, so there is a plan B. But I fully agree that it has to be a value for money call. I mean, if we have to pay an unreasonable amount of money, then the answer is no. It's as easy as that. We will not be held at ransom to pay it. So it's a decision that once it's there, will come to national government, will come to the provincial government. If we can just talk about ridership a bit. I don't know whether the committee is aware that at the moment, we are busy with a freeway improvement plan in Gauteng. On the 1st of January 2011, every freeway in Gauteng, every one that you know, Ben Schoeman, the R21, the R24, will become a toll road. It'll cost you 60 cents per kilometer to use the toll road. So the cost to a motorist, if you live in Tshwane and you work in Joburg or vice versa, the toll will cost you 1,000 rand a month. So your actual out-of-pocket expense will be 1,000 rand a month, plus minus. That's the toll strategy that will be implemented. I live in Tshwane. I work in Johannesburg. My fuel cost is about 2,500 rand a month. So my direct cost to move between Pretoria and Joburg per month would be 3,500 rand a month. The train, the cost of the train, we are working. I haven't finalized the numbers, but we're working on close to 800 to 1,000 rand a month ticket for running on the train. So it will become an economic viability. And please, Chair, when you begin in Gauteng, have a look on the people using Ben Schoeman. Those are the people we want to move into the train. So this is an economic decision. It's not a fancy, nice to have decision. This is a decision of saying we want the economy of Gauteng to grow and to prosper and to counter the whole loss of congestion, pollution, quality of life. So the fare structure is such that we will be paying, and the member is right, we'll be paying around 50 to 60 cents per kilometre. So that would work out to about 20 rand a trip between Pretoria and Johannesburg, and 12, 13 rand between Sandton and Rhodesfield.
Can I interject then? The members here are the ones that are asked questions by the public. And if the presentation doesn't say what is the advantage of having a car train as opposed to riding a car, say up front, to enable us to take that package and give those answers to the public. The public will remain unaware of why it is important to have a car train as opposed to using a car going to work. How a member of the public will benefit, why we are having a Gautrain as opposed to allowing people to ride their cars. If you give the statistics of how much petrol is used if one passenger rides in a car, the air pollution if so many cars are on the road, the road infrastructure degradation, then people begin to understand, appreciate why a Gautrain as opposed to the current situation. But if it is hidden or it is only known by the department, it makes it difficult for the public to know. And the public doesn't go to the department. They ask the members in their constituency offices.
No, it is true, and Chair, what I undertake to do is to draw up a fact sheet. So we draw up a fact sheet around what the benefits are. If one looks in the world, public transport is a carrot and stick. You have to have a carrot and you have to have a stick. And they have to be the same size. If you have a stick that says you're not allowed to use your car, but there's no public transport, or you're not allowed to use public transport, but there's no car, then it falls away. So let's just look at the carrot and the stick. The carrot side of the plane is to say exactly safe, dependable, cost is known, you know that you will be, that you can go from A to B. So that's the carrot side. The stick side is actually, in terms of the National Land Act, we can do congestion pricing. You know, in London, they have a cordon around the London CBD, and if you go in there, it's now £15. You pay £15 toll to go into the centre of London. So, but you can't apply this stick if you don't have the carrot. But in my case, I'm saying the stick is the congestion. The stick will be the toll fees that are being done. And that's a plan that's been approved. I mean, those of you that come from Gauteng, you know, we're busy working full-time on that freeway premise scheme. So that's around that. Now, then the next thing is jobs. Chair, construction. Construction is per definition a project by project by project. But what we want to do, and remember when we developed this program, the Deputy President then was working on the Eskisa project. And the Eskisa project is exactly that, to build South Africa through infrastructure investment. If one looks at Eskom, we will have the developments in Eskom building power space that are going to be four times more than the Gautrain. So if we can develop technical skills that have certification of training, we don't give that person a job. We give him a career. We give him a career so that he can say, I'm an operator, I can operate the crane, or I'm a technician, and then he can go from Gautrain into the next project, into Eskisa projects in our country, into the stadiums, into Eskom and that. So we can't sustain. We can't in a civil engineering project train a person and then keep him busy when the project's finished. But the idea is that South Africa will grow. We are a developing country, and we're going to spend money on that. So the question can be asked, the skills that we do in the train, is that transferable to another project? Is a person that can do a tunnel for us or do bridges for us, is that person properly skilled so he can go to the next Eskisa project and run that? The structure of the company, Jay, I apologize if I was asked the question, but I will give the chair a fact sheet on the costing of the train in terms of public usage, and I'll give the chairman, when I get back to Pretoria, if you allow me 2 days, I'll give you the full structure of the SPG, of the Black Economic Empowerment Company. We have had lots of questions in the press, which we've answered, and there's no conflict of interest anywhere in the SPG group. But the SPG group is, I think, about 20 companies. What is interesting, Chair, is that the Taxi Association is one of the owners of SPG. So SPG, when we run the train, we are actually helping the taxi industry with their equity participation there. Thank you.
I think the question was around the whole ownership, not only the taxi association.
Can I just say, PPP creates a special purpose vehicle. So it's a special company that has shareholders. So in our company, if you allow me to check, can I just show you it on the board for you? I'll just show you.
Yes. Can I also explain why this area is of concern to us? It is because South Africa has produced a few black millionaires that are participating in each and every project that exists in South Africa. And we don't think that we struggled for that. The aim was not to produce a few individuals that would be super rich. We want to see a situation where the wealth begins to trickle down. And also we would want to see a situation where when we are talking about a triple BEE, it becomes a genuine empowerment, not a window dressing type of empowerment. That's why we are concerned about that. We want to see different names from the usual names that we always know about.
If you allow me to, if I can just show you, this is a complicated structure of what we're doing. But if one looks, and this is a challenge for empowerment, like our country. We have a concession company. This is a company that will make money down the line in investment. So this is a long term. So you can invest, and what is quite interesting in this investment company, the foreign companies have sold 8%. Of their shares to J&J Group and 8% of their shares to AXA Bank. So this concession company will, at the end of the concession, make profit. So what we have is that we have, in the concession company, we have 25% of that ownership is in black.
Is it possible for us to have that page?
Yes.
Just that page given to us so that we can look at it like as a hard copy.
Yes. Well, I'll send it through to you. The point I want to make is that you can make long-term profits out of this. So SPG is there. But then what happens is that the work is done on this level. So SPG is here also. Mm-hmm. So you can earn money through your investment, but you can earn money through your work. So there are two bites at the cherry. So here the work is being done, and here on the electrical side, we've created a black, fully owned track lane company. This is going to be the biggest track lane company in South Africa. All the new work that will be done is going to be done by that. So we will get a millionaire coming out of this one now. So that's why you'll see SPG has got different stakeholders in there. Below the line, these are the procurement and subcontracting, where we have all the BEDs. So we are really trying to say, from an economic point of view, you have long-term investment, and then you have actual work being done here, and that's twice that you can make money out of it. But I will.
For me, it needs a follow-up and further unpacking to make us understand, because it has not given us a clear answer as to who. You can see the boxes that's down there, but we don't know the faces in those boxes. And that is what we want to know. And on which box is the taxi industry?
The taxi industry, this SPG, they have equity in a concession company, and then if any profit is made in the operational side, they will get money out of that.
And how many associations?
Can I please give it to you in detail? I will give you that.
Okay. The next round of questions. The first are followed by Kuno. Honorable
Speaker. few questions. I'll start with the Gautrain presentation. It's something that my colleague has also brought up previously. It concerns me. I did bring it up when I was in Gauteng, and that is the story of the tracks that are completely different in the case of Gautrain to everything else. And I still haven't got to the bottom of the real reason why we introduced completely new tracks when the later presentation confirms that there's going to be a standardized track, which I've got a related question on that on the second presentation. So on the one side, we've got a track going in a certain direction with Gautrain, and then the department is saying that they want to standardize on the 1435 track. So maybe that can be unpacked, because I'm still very confused about that. But I'd like to then, my next question is also, and I think this is what Honourable Farrow was after. We understand that obviously at this stage, while construction is happening, that it's the employment of these contractors is based on when the work is happening. And once it's over, it's over. The question that I'm asking is, what has there been allowed to model into what jobs are being created once Gautrain is up and running and it's actually functioning? It's mentioned in the presentation, I think it's 11,000 or so, 63,000 jobs that have been created during the work being done. And I understand that. But the question is, what kind of jobs, what number of jobs are we talking about once Gautrain is up and running and functioning? And then a very basic question is how confident is the department and the Gautrain people sure that at least the route between Oor Tambo and Sandton is going to be ready by 2010? Are we very confident of that? And then questions pertaining to the second presentation that I had is, first of all, a copy of the presentation. And if I could ask, Madam Chair, through you, is that in future when we get presentations, that we actually get the presentation that's been done, that's been given to us on the screen. Because I, for one, I know a lot of other colleagues do this, we actually make notes on the hard copy as the presentation has been given to us. And it was very disconcerting trying to flip backwards and forwards in a different presentation to that that was on the screen. So if that could, I would appreciate a copy of what was presented to us, please. And then my next question is going back to the gauge. In the presentation, it talks about that there was going to be a standardizing of the gauge, 1435 track, and it talks even through the rest of the continent and so forth. However, in that same presentation, it's also saying, it confirms it by saying there's going to be a gradual introduction into one standardized gauge. But seems to contradict what the first presentation said. So that could be unpacked because it really confuses me. In that same presentation, it talks about fragmentation, which I agree with, and all the reasons and so forth. It spoke about that and the disjointedness that exists. But I never saw any solutions. I saw the list of problems, but I didn't see what was actually being done at the moment. So it seemed to list what fragmentation was, but I didn't see any concrete steps. It all sort of seemed to be very theoretical. And then what interested me in that same presentation was if there was going to be a formation of a National Transport Central Planning Agency. If that can be unpacked and told a little bit about, because that's news to me, but perhaps I might just not be in the loop. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope that when you bring the list of DEs that you have asked, that the Chairperson has asked, you will also bring the breakdown of the amounts exactly. You know, we know that the government has given 25 billion rand, but we know that there's private sector, and there's also a portion that the provincial government of Gauteng has given. We want to know those amounts exactly. We want to know exactly how much is the private sector taking out. And we were told earlier on that you won't be finished by 2010, of which when you came to the committee, you were the one that was saying by 2010 we'll be finished. I don't know how is anybody going to push you to do that. And you have said, when you answered my colleague earlier on,
that you will have buses that will be ready for 2010. Should not, if you are not finished by then, who's going to pay for those buses? In your project plan, do we have can we have that, you know, for 2010, so that you can see which buses are you going to provide, so that at the end of the day, the transport plan of the department does not duplicate what we have planned for 2010, because we don't want to see the department having another plan and you have another plan when you have said in the beginning, when we are pushing for this project of yours to kickstart, you were saying 2010. And when you say in your presentation that you are going to develop SMMEs, how exactly are you developing those SMMEs? For when we came, you told us that the engineers and all those people will be from outside South Africa. Even the material that you are going to use, I'm not an engineer, so I won't use the term that he has used. But exactly the skills that have been transferred to us, what are those skills? Mm-hmm. And how can we see those skills? Mm-hmm. You have said that after they finish this this project, you will make sure that those people are actually employed somewhere. How are you going to influence that? I mean, there are so many projects that have happened. People have been employed, and after that, like Mr. Faro has said, it's goodbye, thank you so much. We'll give you 25 rands when we have made 10,000 rands from your 25 rands, and that's it. How are you, it's interesting. You know, somebody, a chairperson, just to make a joke, you know, after they left, they said, you know, how 10 people, one day they will come to Parliament and ask for an ocean to be built in Gauteng, you know. I mean, that's how he was influencing it. You know, we all fell for this. We thought this really would be would have gone. I mean, Gautrain would have been there. But the other thing is, what we have said that Gautrain from the beginning, it was not meant for poor people. I mean, if a ticket will cost from 800 rand to 1,000 rand, which is what we needed. At least now he has come up with the breakdown of which we didn't have then. This really shows that this is not a project for poor people. But how are they going to benefit from that? Except from being exploited and to say, you know, for 2 months you have a job and after that you don't have a job at all. Those people who are in Pretoria, those are surrounding areas, how are those people going to benefit from this? Except for those people who have got, you know, houses or property in those lands that will be rebuild and all that. And exactly how much is that property going to cost? Because I know that you have said they will be giving some money and all that. We need to have breakdowns. Like the chairperson said, when we go outside, people ask us questions. So we need to give them answers, not to say, I mean, we don't understand, because that's exactly what we are frustrated, because we don't understand. This thing has been pushed, and 25 billion rand from taxpayers' money has been taken out to Gautrain. We need to know how will the ordinary people benefit from that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Before you respond, you know, I'm very fortunate to come from a development background. And my training is non-formal. But the training that I received enabled me to link the human resource development and the community social and economic development. I was part of a project in Nepal that first dealt with peace initiative between the IFP and the ANC, backed by the fact that there were young people who were named Amaqola criminals because they were forced by violence to leave their home and abandon school. When we analyzed their situation and initiated peace, we also facilitated their training. They rebuilt their houses that were destroyed in Nepal, 650 of them, both IFP and ANC. But today, that project, we can say Martha Zuma, who was part of Imbali Rehabilitation Program, is now working in the office of the MEC for Arts, Culture and Sport in KZN. Kumbuzo Mvelase, who was living in the streets, produced by that project, is now working in the office of the Premier in KwaZulu-Natal. And we are proud to be able to point at them to say they were in the streets, they were labeled amakola. We put them in a program, Imbali Rehabilitation Program. The first goal was to empower them with the skills. The second goal was to make them rebuild the houses that they were part of destroying. The third goal was to get them into universities and empower them with the skills that would enable them to participate in rebuilding this country. And we can point at a number of them that are there today located in the high offices of government. We want the same in terms of the skills breakdown. Are they trained? Ukuthi baqova amagwenya, badayise kwi-informal trading spaza shop, or they are trained to become tenants? We have a shortage of tenants in the country. We have a shortage of boilermakers in the country. Are they trained the very same training that everybody wants to train, bricklaying, when there is skill shortage? The state president of this country, the former state president, Comrade Thabo Mbeki, said in the State of the Nation address of 2006, South Africa will require to develop the kind of skills that are needed to develop the economy of this country. And that is what we want to see, to say. This project produced these types of skills that are required by the country to develop the country over a period of years. Because we have seen the training that is informed by the perceived needs of a training company, of a training service provider, not the need, the felt needs of government and the felt needs of the community. That is the relationship we want to see. I was a deputy mayor in Oku. Number of service providers came to us when they were already given the training job to do, and then say to us, give us 50 young people to train in what? Building skills. We are a water service authority. We need a tenant. We didn't need a bricklayer. So that is the kind of answers we want to hear.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question. The BEE, again, Chairperson. You know, earlier on you've talked about the BEE not being front. You know, I just want to know what is their participation, just to make sure that they're not fronting. They're not as part of Bombela, and that's it. They get money at the end of the day, but there's nothing that they're gaining from that money, like what the Chairperson has said earlier on. Thank you, Chair.
So you see, when you say a turnkey contractor is a contractor that will decide who has to. And the turnkey contractor is a contractor that also can do the other jobs that are meant to be subcontracted to other people. So a turnkey contractor is a very dangerous approach, because it allows that contractor to actually have a decision-making power over and above the client.
Yes, I want to try and get some answers which I haven't been given, and I would appreciate. I asked the question about the completion of this project in terms of meeting the World Cup. And in the newspaper recently, there were some figures which were pronounced relating to the extra cost of actually getting the job done in time. What I was asking was whether those figures now, which would require extra expenditure, are going to be in the cost of the project or outside the cost of the project as an additional cost, and how that figure, those new figures, say it's 100 million to get the thing done now as opposed to not getting it finished in time, will impact on the fare. I'm trying to get to that point, and any other aspect. And when I referred to the escalation being fixed, Mr. van der Merwe, I'm quoting from your words, which we can get verbatim reports from. When I inquired last time, you said that the 30%, and this is the figure you used, overrun in respect of any cost to the project will be built in. In other words, that includes CPIX. Now, I'm trying to establish if that is still the status quo. And finally, there was another question which related to the buses, which were brought up. As part of the integration project, there were 250 buses that were going to be provided by this project as part and parcel of the integration. Now, in this report that you've given me now, you talk about 125 buses. So there's now 125 less buses than in the original contract. Now, is that a reduction in the contract, or is that just some 125, we don't need 125 buses, we're just going to write them off? Can you please answer those questions? Thank you very much.
Can I respond to question?
Thank you, Chair. Can I start off by talking about the gauge? I know that the department will also talk about it, but if we can talk about standard gauge. The standard gauge is 1,435 millimeters, which is the Gautrain gauge. The gauge that we're running in our country is called Cape gauge or a narrow gauge. That's 1,067 millimeters. So that's the difference. The old 3'8", 3'6" versus the 4'8". So we're running in our country on a narrow gauge, and the Gautrain is the wider gauge. Now, the question which is asked, why do we change? Why will one want to change to a water gauge?
Before you continue, can I get a query? The Gautrain gauge is the same as the standard gauge that is being proposed.
Yes, it's exactly the same. It's called a standard gauge because about 65 to 70% of all railways in the world run on the standard gauge. And that's where we're going to now. So the question, again, is why did Gautrain move away from the gauge? We have in South Africa about 22,000 kilometers of rail track, which are all on the narrow gauge. We come and we build a new one. Now, there's a few reasons. The first one is purely safety. If you're running a train at speed, it is about 30 or 40% safer to run it with a wider gauge. And that's just pure mathematics, so the safety. The second thing is that in our country, we have neglected our rail network. We have rail technology, which is 1960. It's stuff that was designed in 1960, our signaling, our rolling stock. So we have in South Africa a system where all the signaling is outside the train. It's next to the track. So you have a train driver coming, if he sees a red signal in terms of railway practice, at the next red signal, he must stop. If he or she ignores that signal and they continue, you could have an accident. The new trains, the modern trains, have all their signaling inside the cab. So there's no signaling outside, so the train driver in the cab, he will see a light coming up saying there's a red signal coming. At the next red light, if he doesn't stop, the train stops automatically. So from a safety perspective, the new technology trains all have in-cab signaling, the old trains have outside signaling. The other one is power. The power of Metro Rail is 3,000 volts direct current. The new technology in the world is 15,000 to 25,000 volts alternating current. So if you buy rolling stock off the shelf, that's the type of power you have. So you would have to run two power systems. Now, Chair, I have a paper that was written by the Railway Institute of South Africa exactly around the gauge. And it's quite interesting. This is really very good reading, Chair. And this gives a picture of the railway system in the world, all the systems. And it's quite incredible to see how many countries are battling with exactly what we are battling, is to say they have a non-standard gauge, and how do they move to the standard gauge? And what the paper says is that you can't throw away what you have. But if you have a system which has gone down, and instead of taking that system, exactly as we said in the second presentation, if you take the corridor between Johannesburg and Durban, or the corridor between Johannesburg and China, When you start new technologies, you move to the standard gauge. The cost of equipment off the shelf is about 20% cheaper throughout the world because the trains are there. You can buy them off the shelf. You don't have to have it specially made. So there is a transition going from a non-standard gauge to a standard gauge. And we have, in the world, we have India that has a very wide gauge, and they're coming back to standard gauge. And that's why in the presentation, what is happening in SADC, what is happening up to the equator, what is happening in Africa is that Africa has taken a decision that when they will upgrade any system, they will go to the next grade, to the standard gauge. So the standard gauge debate is really something much wider, and it's not just on the whole train, but again, the project that the government's approved, the Moloto Pretoria project, is also on the standard gauge. So you would have that. But in the chair, it's not a panic. In France, their high-speed train, their TGV, runs on its own track. They don't allow anything else on it. So if you want to interact between the high-speed train in France, you cross over at the platform. So the train stops at the platform and you walk over to the other side. In Japan, the Shinkansen works exactly the same, is that you have you have horizontal integration and not vertical integration. So I think the question around the gauge, and I would really ask members to please have a look at this. This is a very impartial, but a very technically well thought out paper that they've written around gauge in South Africa. This is really a very informative piece of paper written by the Railroads Association of South Africa. So I would give it to Chair, to you. Then, the question of the jobs. I agree that, you know, if you get driven by a service provider, it's like if you get a contract from overseas and they have a flood of fridges, they'll all of a sudden say your requirement is fridges and sell you fridges. We are saying in job creation, if I can give you an example, because it's actually, we've tried in this SED brochure that I've given you to start personalizing it to say these are people that have been influenced by this. If you look at any construction site in South Africa, there's always a tower crane that is working on a building site. Now, we found that there's nobody doing training in a tower crane because it's something they put it on site and this is what's working on site, picking up the concrete and stuff like that. So I've rented 3 tower cranes. And I'm not doing training to tower crane operators. So with the person, he spends a month there, we certify him as a tower crane operator so that when he comes to a site and says, a building site, I have got a tower crane qualification, then he or she can use it. So it's a practical thing that's needed in South Africa. But again, it's the same as calling in the people that are building the Greenpoint Stadium. When the Greenpoint Stadium is finished, it's finished. Thing is that can that skill be transferred into another ASCISA process? And ESCOM is talking about hundreds of billions of rands worth of work to be done. So the question must be asked, can a person being trained under our program, will he or she be a candidate for that? And it's interesting, you said the president, the president came to site. We have a very fancy machine that digs walls of underground stations. But it's an incredible, complicated machine, and we'll never use it again. So when the president was on the site, he said, why are all these Chinese people here? And I said, man, they are the experts in the world. They've flown in, they're here for 6 months, and then they go. So it doesn't help me to train people in that skill, because when they go, they take the machine with them. So that type of skill will import. So we have a very clear thing that if there's a skill that we won't need, then we can import it. But if there's a skill that we're going to use that will be used again, we don't import. We don't import, and I agree, welders, not like that we're doing.
Just on that, how does that relate to the indigent register?
Excuse me, to that?
To the indigent register of the municipalities around Gauteng. Because if the project has got social upliftment benefits, it then has to relate to the indigent register as one of the criteria for identifying trainees. It has to relate to the child-headed household so that we can take those families out of that level, those families. It also has to relate to women headed families, so that we can begin to empower them. It should not be a policy on paper that is not implemented when there is a project. And how does the criteria for selecting the trainees relate to the social grant register? To say in this household, they are dependent on the social grant, but there is a trainable, a potential trainable person, so that we can then relieve government from looking after the family by providing a social grant and begin to empower the family to look after itself.
Okay. I was Director General of Public Transport Roads and Works in the province, and I went with the Premier when we launched our extended public works program in Soweto. The Premier said, we will create jobs at 40 rand a job. And I thought, you know, he's in trouble. They're going to give him a hard time. The people queued in front of the provincial government offices for 3 days to get on the register. The need is incredible. That I know. And we have got just one small part to play. We had, within 3 days, we had 150 people on our register for extended public works program. And these are part time jobs, but just to keep the pot going. So how we fit it all together, because you see I'm employing 10,000 people on a daily basis on the project. What we have done is that we've spoken to the councillors next to the train in the areas that we're going through. So they provide us the people that are being trained and the people that are being employed.
That is the answer I was looking for. Because it could be a patronage related kind of training to build people's people, not to develop the community. And if the family that is in the indigent register is not in the pocket of the councillor, it will not benefit. So it is a criteria that is based on the human judgment, not the data that the president talked about, to say municipalities will have to develop a household socio-economic database that will influence the training and the job opportunities for the needed.
But Chair Cabinet, the next issue that I have to talk about is the Soccer World Cup. Chair, I did say it, but let me say it again. The project was announced by the Premier in January 2000. When he opened the legislature, the Premier said, we will build the Gautrain. That was in 2000. In April 2004, we were awarded the Soccer World Cup. So it was 4 years later. So 4 years down the line, we got the soccer. So what we tried to do is to have the project ready in time for the soccer. It was never, and we can go back and listen to the answer. It was never said to be a soccer project, because that's what Minister Manuel gave us, the instruction, that this is not a soccer project. This is a train that has to run for another 100 years. So it's never been sold as a soccer project. It was sold to say, we have to make a decision, yes or no, to go ahead with the project. And if we go ahead with the project, there would be a possibility of reaching the soccer. But it was never sold as a soccer project. You can't spend this amount of money on a four-week event. So that's the first point. The second point is that when we signed the document, we signed the concession agreement on the 27th of September 2006. At that stage, we did not know when the exact date that the soccer was going to happen. FIFA, we were still negotiating with FIFA on exactly when it would happen. So we said to the concessionaire, We signed it on the 27th of September. The project must be ready on the 27th of June, 45 months later. Then we said, but as a safety valve, let's negotiate to bring the date forward to the 8th of June. So we have a negotiated part in the contract to bring the date to the 8th of June, 2010. Now that we know what the number is, we would like the train to be ready by the 27th of March, about 27th of May. So now we have a one-month acceleration, and that's where we are talking to the concessionaire. And again, if there's a number quoted in the newspaper, I would be very interested to know about it because I don't know the number yet. But again, I want to reiterate that that number will have to be funded. And if I can answer the question, it will not be added onto the project. That has to be recouped from tickets. It would be an add-on amount of money that either the provincial government or the national government will have to fund. But we can't have the debate until we have it. Then, to answer the question around the buses haven't changed up and down. I did a presentation in this committee in November of 2005. November 2005, we had two bidders that we were still negotiating with. We had thought that there would be 250 buses. We have asked the concession to move a certain amount of people, and what the concessionaire has done, we thought that they would use the smaller buses, the 35-seater buses. The concession that we signed on the 27th of September, which is nearly a year later, has got just big buses. They don't have the smaller buses in, and there's 125 there. So the buses haven't changed. Now let's come back to the bus plan. The tender allows for the 125 buses. All that we've asked the concessionaire is that the buses must be available. So if there's a delay on the train, the buses are still there. So they will operate the buses as part of the project. So it's not new buses, it's not extra money, it's just to operate the buses as a plan B. Must duplicate. Again, very importantly, we will do nothing without the departments. If one talks about the plan, remember, we have a total plan for Gauteng for moving the fans for the 2010. So the link between the airport and Sandton has been earmarked for the train, and if it doesn't happen, we can either replace it with the Gauteng buses or include it in the plan. But the 2010 soccer plan is being driven by national, provincial, and the local authorities. So we aren't working without engineers from overseas. We have about, in the total of everything, we may have had 300 people from overseas. 300 people that have come in, and we've employed on average about 10,000 people per month. the ensured job continuity. When you have the people that are building the stadiums there, you must please invite me that I can listen to how they will answer the question of saying how does a construction project ensure that it goes. The only insurance that I have is to create skills that will be needed in the future. The question on BEs, are they not a front? We have an independent socioeconomic monitor that does exactly that checks whether this is not just pipelines. You may have read in the newspaper there's a contractor that was caught out by AXA that was fronting. They have got a small portion of work in us. We've blacklisted them, and we're busy moving them out. So the effect of fronting, it's a real threat, but I think we have systems in place not to be caught out to have fronting. But the answer there, escalation will be fixed. Really, if I've now been a civil engineer in this country for 37 years. If I ever said that the escalation is 30%, I should not have my job. Again, try and work out what was said. It could be that there would be 5% escalation over 5 years, and you add it up, that could be 30%. But what I'm saying is that the escalation is fixed in the financial model, and we are paying the difference between what was predicted and what is actually happening. And as I said again, it's working. Because remember, escalation is the cost relative to a year back. So the escalation for the last year of this project will actually become positive in government's favor, because if our escalation is now 8 or 9% and it goes down to 7%, the escalation is actually dropping. So we will know what it is. Like every project in this country of South Africa is subject to escalation. So this is nothing unique in the train. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's just a slight concern I have. Is the requirement of additional electricity. We have catered for that because the whole train will draw much more out of this. And then secondly, what in case of blackout?
The first question is a question of liquidity.
Electricity.
Chair, there has been some funny stories in the newspaper saying that we'll have to build another power station to power train. Can I just say that a normal power station has got what they call a six-pack. It's 600 megawatts, six blocks of that. So a normal power station will give 3,600 megawatts. So in South Africa, our power station do 3,600 megawatts. The train will use, on average, about 6 to 10 megawatts of power. So it's a very small fraction. So it won't change. Won't change the whole electricity side. But what happens in the case of a blackout, what we've done is that we have three feeds coming into the whole train system. And if one looks at outages at the moment, they don't happen all at the same place. There's different places that go down. So we will be protected in a sense against that. But if there is a power failure, we have a system of pulling the trains out of the tunnel, but we will not be able to run the system. So we will stand as any other person that uses power.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because you're stuck in a tunnel, what signal are you going to give to somebody else coming in?
I thought there was a hand from Mr. Situ.
Chairperson, sorry about my voice. But can you continue?
I think what he is trying to say is coming to the issue of the standard gauge, as he was explained, that it's a standard gauge is a brand name, and narrow gauge is what was called Cape gauge. It's a 1067. I hope that has been clarified. And what make us to propose or to move from narrow gauge to standard gauge is the fact that as we need to do business with other countries, we cannot move from countries to countries, because most of the countries, the standard countries, are also moving to standard gauge, as we explained in that presentation. And the other thing is that it will be very difficult for us to get parts of narrow gauge, because countries that are producing parts have moved from producing parts for narrow gauge. They are now developing standard gauge, meaning that it will take us 15 years to get a part for a narrow gauge train, so it won't help us. And my boss was in China last week. He was reporting to us. He told us that he was in a train that was traveling from one place, a distance similar from Joburg to Bulawayo. It's about 330 kilometers, and the train travels only 27 minutes from Joburg to Bulawayo. That's a high-speed technology, and that's what we anticipate in the country. We cannot move to the future backward. We need to learn from others. That we need to learn from the best practices. And coming to the gradual migration of Gautrain, it's a first step towards moving to the future. And as we indicated that Gautrain is as a first step, we still, and as we say that from now on, as agreed by the SEDEC, the AU resolution, that all the rail lines that need to be built from now onwards will be on standard gauge. So Gautrain is just the first step. All the other rail, we anticipate it to be on standard gauge for the free movement and seamless movement of goods and people. And it's when we say it's a gradual migration, we want to say that we cannot do it overnight. We acknowledge that it's a process that will take us time, but we cannot at the same time move backwards. It took China 15 years to have the high-speed rail that they were on, they traveled on. So we can also start somewhere, and we cannot move backward as we indicated. And Transnet, during our engagement, they said that it can take them 5 years to produce the first locomotive on high-speed rail. Coming to the fragmentation of policies, fragmentation will be addressed in our phase four report. We acknowledge that there's different policies and different ways of doing things, especially regarding the institutional arrangement in provinces and different to what is between provinces. We find Northwest is doing things differently, and so we acknowledge that, and it will be addressed in the phase four. And the Central Planning Agency will be unpacked in phase three and phase four. We indicated that NetMap is a process, so some of the answers we don't have it now, but we will have it as we move on. I don't know if I've missed something. Yes? The planning agency said it will be unpacked in the phase three and phase four. And it's for the transport sector.
We have got the 10 years, are you correct? Because we're not much. A woman is there to represent a man's voice. I would suggest that those who want to add can add without whispering to her ear. Because I thought she was assisting Mr. Siduma because he has a problem with the voice. But if there are any additions, the other officials from the department are free to make those additions without making her amathambe bangoma. Ukuthi khuluma omunye umuntu kodwa kube khuluma izwi voice yomunye. Mr. Anyohan.
Thanks, Chair. If I can just add on what my colleagues have just alluded to. I think there's an urgent need and a policy view from the department that we've been talking inefficiencies within the rail system for more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the investment requirements have increased marginally over the years without seeing a proper shift of traffic, either passenger or freight, from road to rail, and culminating into the pictures we see on our road network, particularly the secondary network. So we have a policy view that on the freight side, there should be an optimum split. There's goods that gets transported on the road that's not supposed to be on the road, that's supposed to be on the rail. But they can't shift to be on the rail because of the inefficiency elements, which is speed, reliability, your turnaround time within the logistics chain. Mm-hmm. On the passenger is a similar thing. And government, particularly on the passenger side, cross-subsidizing that shortfall. We keep on investing into something that's not benefiting government. So the change of technology, the change of just rail development and benchmark it against international best practice, we see it as an urgent need as a department. There's two issues, Honorable Chair and members, that I'm going to talk to in this regard, particularly on the issue of what social obligations do we have as a department that would enable a life of an ordinary South African to change. Mm-hmm. Is what I've just highlighted briefly when I laid down the simplification of the presentation from NetMap. Is we're developing what we know as, on the freight side, the rail branch line strategy. It's basically a strategy that seeks to revive the secondary rail network, which is mostly located in rural areas. We've piloted the process between the past years, reviving three lines. The one in the Eastern Cape, which is the Kai Rail. The second one in the Northern Cape, Belmont Douglas. The third one in KZN, which is Impangi. What we found out is that it makes all the pilot projects made a difference in the life of the ordinary people in those areas. Mm-hmm. We've on average employed not less than 200 local people when we did those pilots. But the unfortunate part is that we never had a ring-fenced budget as a department. To inject money into those projects. So what we've agreed with Transnet Freight Rail is that we have now a list of lines that we think we should submit to National Treasury for funding based on those on in rural areas. But those lines, we've added a factor of linking them with the deteriorated road network. Mm-hmm. So the strategy is at its final draft stage, which we have submitted to the DG for comment. We intend taking it through to cabinet probably late this year or early next year, which is the branch line strategy. And parallel to that, for the next financial year, we have submitted over the MTF period an estimated amount for reviving those lines, which will also give an opportunity to employ local people, an amount of 1.8 billion, which is not an accurate amount, but basically a calculated amount per lines within the various nine provinces. So hopefully from the committee, we would like the committee to support us through vocalizing that project to National Treasury, because the view of National Treasury is that rail is not a competency, particularly on the freight side, of the Department of Transport. The funding would only be possible if you have a policy decision to intervene with regards to rail. So the branch line strategy is delayed. The more it delayed and the more it would delay, the lesser chances we stand to get funding that we have submitted through the MTF period to National Treasury. That's purely a strategy intervention that seeks to enhance the local economic development of rural communities in that regard. The second project that's coming is related to what I've alluded to earlier on, the axle load mass limits. How best do we review the mass limit on truckers not to overload? We're looking forward towards development of a road freight strategy that would begin to limit cargo that does not belong on road to be on rail. But our engagement through the processes is that, let's say Cabinet approves that strategy, would Transnet Freight Rail be ready? The view is they would never be ready, and they have never been ready over the 10 years, because they focus on the current technology. Improving the current 30-year-old technology over and over again, and when you sit as a government employee talking to an operator like Imperial Logistics, they tell you in public platforms that I cannot sacrifice my 200 fleet of trucks to go to an unreliable mode of transport. My trucks are faster than even the mode of transport that you want me to ship the goods to. So the notion that we need to plan around the technology that we have, there's nothing wrong about it, but the ordinary operator on the ground, even a BU operator, without giving those answers that how fast would that rail be compared to a truck, we would never achieve the objective we want to achieve. So hence, in a gradual and phased approach, we need to think beyond the current technology in that sense. So basically, that's the view where we're coming from, to shift towards the latest technologies, both on passenger and freight. Thanks.
Thank you. I think that that input was required, because as we sit here, we would also want to understand the challenges that you are faced with as a department, and also the role that you think we can play in giving you a support to ensure that we create conditions that are going to enable the department to facilitate transformation in the country. Because we don't want a situation where we sit around this table as us and them without talking about the challenges that the department is faced with and the intervention that the department thinks is required from the portfolio to enable the department to achieve its mandate. At the same time, we would want the department to understand that we are here as public representatives, and our way of looking at issues is more informed by the conditions of the constituencies that we represent. There was a lot of noise when the Gautrain project was introduced, particularly from the poor communities, to say the developed and urban communities are being prioritized. We have waited for apartheid to go away for a period of more than 48 years. We are still going to wait for its development for a period that we do not know, when we have put in place a government that we thought would prioritize our needs. And we would want to have thank you, a kind of understanding that enables us to give answers to questions that are raised by the communities that we represent. Now, the question that I would want to ask is, how familiar is the department with the Masakane campaign document, particularly the principle that talks about the uneven levels of development in the country? And to what extent do you use that in prioritizing projects so that we can create a balance between maintenance of the existing services and upgrading of the poor services and provision of the non-existent services? And also, to what extent do we try and unpack what was meant by the presidential poverty nodal point and the development, the rural development, so that we can begin to have an understanding as to why certain things are prioritized as opposed to what we think should be prioritized. Like, for instance, if agrarian revolution is seen as the local economic development aspect for rural communities to say, go back to agriculture, but there is no infrastructure that promotes that agrarian revolution, how do we achieve that? And what planning, a coordination of efforts happens between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Rural Development and the Department of Transport in as far as making it possible for rural communities to participate in the economic activities that are presented by the very same natural conditions that it's rural areas. The only thing that you can do is agricultural development. But without adequate network, without also water for irrigation, there's nothing you can do. It can remain a pie in the sky that you are going to. But there is food shortage in this country. There is vast land in the rural areas. But we want to see a coordination of events. So the question is, how familiar are you with the Masakane document as an ongoing campaign? And how do you relate to it when planning and prioritizing projects? Because I think there wasn't going to be a lot of noise if the investment that happened in the Gautrain, if the Gautrain was started in Soweto, where there's a congestion of people that are earning much, they are poor. They also need to arrive at home, having spent very short time. If we take the example of 27 minutes over a journey of 330 kilometers, it means even a person that lives in Durban can work in Johannesburg and travel daily. And if then you look at the human settlement efforts of slum clearance, without adequate transport between the rural areas and the towns to transport people that are living in the rural areas but working in towns, you would never get rid of the slums. The only answer that would allow you to get rid of the slums is to provide a fast transport that enables a person who lives in Harding and works in Durban to travel on a daily basis, because the transport is there.
Just adding on the matter, Chairperson, the other thing is that, there are so many things that we could do together with the department to make sure that at the end of the day, the people's lives are changed. But for instance, when are you revising, the railway lines in the rural areas? I'm from Free State. There's a railway line between Bloemfontein and Thabantsho. And that is not revived. And I think if it's revived, that can help in terms of transportation and all that. But Chairperson, transferring people from, rural areas into towns, I don't know if you allow us to go back to Mr. Van der Merwe.
His cousin's
okay.
I don't know why is it difficult for them to make a breakdown of figures. We've asked that in the last time and we are asking now, and we never answered that. And Chairperson, we will go to get the verbatim report. Mr. Farmer Melville said that Gautrain was for 2010. He said that. He can deny that now because it's not favoring him. But he said that. And when I just want to find out about the survey, because we were worried as a committee that this does not end up being a white elephant after using a lot of funds. And we asked if there was a survey done, you know, for commuters, the people who are supposed to leave their cars and go into the train. I think Mr. Farrow asked it earlier on, but I didn't hear his answer about that survey. Was it done? Can we have it in, you know, in a report form that this survey was done? And thank you, Chair.
Just to substantiate what my colleague has said here about getting some answers, because as I indicated in the beginning, we have to, at some stage or other, answer and, if necessary, support the project in terms of its expenditure. And we've already seen this escalation, and I'm just concerned that by now we should be in a position to be able to provide figures to this committee to exactly where we are projecting the outcome of this particular project is going. Because if there is going to be cost escalation, and I'm trying to separate, and I know exactly what Mr. van der Merwe is referring to when he talks about escalation, but that is a normal procedure. But when the committee, you know, was scrutinizing the original proposal, and I have it here, and I don't want to go into any argument with him, that I questioned the sort of fixed type contract arrangements, because I said, well, what do you then have fixed in this contract? And the figure that was given to us then as a committee was the 30%, which was not based only on escalation. It was an all-embracing figure which you had used in your projections of the project to cover any overruns, variations, and escalation. That's what I've got written down here. Now, I don't want to go into an argument about that, but if it is a fixed type contract, and this is what we as a committee understood, with this built in, let's call it overrun come escalation of 30%, which is a rather large figure for any contractual arrangement, then what is the final figure going to be? And it comes back to my first question, Madam Chair, that I asked you. The arrangement we understood was that with this total cost of project, this thing would be based on some sustainability which would ensure that the cost of the fare would then be on a ridership of 103 or 104,000 passengers a day. And that anything under that would have to be paid for by government. That is what they call the patronage guarantee. And we asked at that time and said, do we know and are we confident that this train will exceed those limits and that we don't have to make provision like we make for our buses and other public transport entities which are subsidized? Because if we're going to have to provide subsidy for car trains at some stage, we need to know in advance, and we need to know that we are going to have to be able to, somewhere along the line in the medium-term framework, allow for this process, because we run out of money as it is every year in terms of our bus subsidies. Now we've got train subsidies which we have to add to this process on the basis of this risk management agreement that is fixed. And I'm just trying to establish in my own mind and projecting myself forward with this, what is going to be this implication? And can we not get some sort of figures now to sort of say, well, let's translate the cost of this project into fares and then into fares, into ridership, and see what the bottom line is going to be. Because one of the things that we argued at the time from this committee was on the issue of the gauge, was saying, if we're really serious about the integration of the Metro Rail and the Gautrain to make sure that even the poor people that use those trains can actually, you know, integrate their services,
then maybe we should consider looking at some sort of a means where the rails were compatible and that at the same time the platforms and everything else. Now, from what I understand, there is a horizontal sort of type of integration where you jump off one platform and you've got to go to another platform to get a train. But I'm questioning the fact that, you know, we now have a situation where we need to make this thing possibly viable by the introduction of possibly off-peak goods services, because 10% of those vehicles that are running on between Pretoria and Johannesburg are goods and freight and taking goods as well. Now, it's not only passengers that are traveling on those rails. Those goods, freight vehicles are more of a problem to uphold people and their travel time than the actual passenger car. Now, if we can see that there is going to be a period of time where off-peak we can start putting goods onto that car train to run them between Pretoria and Johannesburg, we can also take the trucks off the road. And this is the sort of mentality that we have been, we argued around at the particular time. Now, has any work been done in looking at that implication? In other words, of at a certain time off-peak, when Gautrain is not taking passengers, it could actually add to it a certain amount of freight and remove some of the peak or good services very quickly between Pretoria and Johannesburg or Sandton as another model, and whether those sort of things are looked at as well.
Thanks, Chairperson. We're thinking that maybe we'll respond to this one and then we'll go to the next. I want to respond on the Bloemfontein Chatabancho question. And then Mr. Van der Merwe will respond to the Gautrain issues. Thanks, Chairperson. With regard to the question on the first date, we did receive a request from the province, and we provided funding for feasibility study. It was done, and it was seen feasible to reintroduce services on that line. But currently we are constrained in terms of priorities with regards to funding, the way we are funded. We did meet the province recently, and they were still trying to find, if they can find some funding within their sources, I think within a reasonable short period, there will be services running on that line. But the issue from our side was the issue of funding, wherein we didn't secure funding from National Treasury. We had to prioritize, and that one was cut out of our budget. But something is being done to look at Free State. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Gail. Thank you, Chairperson. Jack, way back while late Joyce Pally was MDC for transport, we took a trip. You were there, Hart was there, I was there, Peter Maluleka was there, to Japan and Spain and all the rest. The question that we asked there while you were there, you know, if you travel, you have certain meetings and then you ask questions, why? It is a good idea to use cars to the station and then take train to town. The answer was there is not enough parking in our station. But if you are able to remove people who are staying in beautiful houses and put in housing, it is really difficult to do that on a railway station, to remove whatever is there. Because we have done it. We have removed people in Irene, people in Waterkloof, preparing for this housing, expensive houses. And you pay those people, I know. And secondly, yes, some
much improvement has been done about these old railway lines. There is a two coach train very slow moving from Tata to East London. It is moving. It is a progress, but I don't think, but it is working. Thank you, sir.
Fatma.
Just to answer the first question, Chair, yes, we're familiar with the Masakane document. Probably our rural transport strategy, which is basically a strategy that intervenes with regards to balancing the imbalances of the past for rural people, is not visible enough. Or probably at some point we need to get the correct component of the department to present the detail of the strategy. But it looked into the presidential nodal points where they funding certain pilot areas. For example, in Limpopo, I know for a fact that in Sekhukhune we have a transport specific pilot that we fund on an annual basis. With regards to that, and in KwaZulu Natal, I can't remember the exact. Nkanyakute is one area in KwaZulu Natal, in Chozini. So basically, our rural transport strategy seeks to achieve that intervention. So we have a rural transport strategy that seeks to achieve that. Secondly, with regards to agrarian revolution, we work closely with the Department of Agriculture in this regard. We actually developed jointly what we call the agro-logistic strategy, which basically deals with issues of food security, rural accessibility to international markets. But as I said earlier on, Honorable Chairperson, is that the difficulty is for the department to fund these processes because of National Treasury having a view that probably is not the department's responsibility to revive rail lines because there is no policy, particularly on the freight side, that determines that effect. Up until we have the branch line strategy into place, we would look into that. There's a number of examples. Honorable members might know about the Harrismith Freight Logistics Hub, which is driven by the Free State Province. We jointly are willing to fund that process, but the view from National Treasury is that it's a flagship project of a province. They have dedicated funding for that project. You don't have any right to contribute funding as national government. So it's a protocol, stereotype kind of a process that you have to go through National Treasury to enable you to achieve certain things, which in their view see them differently. But we continuously pushing that position. So I think that's that on the Masakane. On the off-peak goods into Gauteng, I think Mr. Jack van der Merwe would allude further into that. We haven't looked into that possibility. What we've looked into was the possibility of shifting the flow pattern of trucks to operate off-peak, like early hours of the morning between 12 and 6, and for them not to be on road beyond those times, like your midday period. Because they basically, we agree with the view that they contest the traffic. But that legislation or that intervention would be put into what I've indicated earlier on, the road freight strategy, which would seek to recommend, one, the shift of cargo from road to rail, two, the review of the axle mass limit to deal with the issue of overloading, and three, to begin now to restrict these trucks into specific hours of operation. And four, and just a labor issue to deal with truck driver hours. So those are all the things that would be then indicated in the road freight strategy. So I think from my side, that's it. I don't know whether Jack wants to add any on the Gautrain taking the responsibility in the center.
Okay. Firstly, I'm unfortunately I have a new computer here. Otherwise, I could have shown the slideshow that I showed in 2005, but I will make a copy and show it so that we can't argue about whether the train is there for the shock or not. Mr. Farrell keeps on asking what will the project cost. The project will cost 25.1 billion rand. That's what the project will cost. I gave in my slide four reasons why it could go up. One is Forex, the one is CPIX, one is variation, and the one is claims. So as I said here today, we have spoken about the CPIX, and but the rest of that, so that's why we're projecting it. We aren't projecting anything else. If I can just talk about ridership guarantee. If one looks at any infrastructure, the capital cost to build it is usually a sunken cost. There is no project in this whole world that pays back the capital invested. There is one project, and that's the Hong Kong Underground, but that's quite a unique system because they build 50-story complexes on top of the stations, and it's actually linking shopping malls to each other with an underground system, so that is paid. But there's nowhere else in the world where the capital cost is usually covered. So one is looking at operational cost. If one looks at South Africa at the moment, Metro Rail was on 33% cost recovery. So the ticket that is paid is 33% of the cost of operating the system, and 67% is subsidized. At the moment, Metro Rail is down to 26% cost recovery. So 74% of Metro Rail's cost is subsidized. So public transport per se is a subsidized system. The ridership, again, I said in my lessons learned, this is a greenfields project, and we can do as many studies as we like, but it's a study, it's a theoretical study, how many people use the train. We will see. So we have allowed for a ridership guarantee if the numbers don't gel. The only thing that has changed since we have started the process of the GoTrain, when we did the feasibility study on GoTrain, petrol was 4 rand a litre. There was no tolling strategy. The congestion was much less than what it is now. So there's a lot of factors that have actually pushed up the ridership without us doing anything about it. But the ridership, we'll see when it happens. Concerning the cost of allowing for it, Minister Manuel was really clear that the national government will pay half of the capital cost. The national government will not pay any ridership guarantee. The operational cost of the train has got no contingent liability on national government. We have allowed in the provincial MTF for what we think the ridership guarantee will be, and we will see when we start operating it. But it is a financial problem for the province and not for national. The question of making it viable, if one looks at Metro Rail at the moment, why is Metro Rail not working as good as it should be? Because Metro Rail gives you peak service. It runs in the morning, and then there's a very broken down service during the day, and it runs again at night time. So if you are going to the office and you have to go home, you're really stuck with you don't have transport going back. If you want to have public transport, which is a mode of choice, you have to run a schedule. You have to run every 10 minutes, every 20 minutes. So it doesn't mean to say there's an off-peak in Gautrain's case. If we want to go to freight, the only freight that we can look at is high-value, low-weight airport freight that you're sending to the airport. Because otherwise, if you have to have a truck taking something to be put on the train in Pretoria, then 40 kilometers further, there must be a truck to take it off again, to take it to its destination. So freight, logistically, it would be very difficult. The station layouts are not there to allow. Remember, the train stops 40 seconds at the station. So you have 40 seconds to get on and off. So if we have now big freight boxes that have to go in and out, then logistically, it'll just make it. If one looks at how do we get to the station, in Europe, if you live a kilometer around the station, the people say you're willing to walk. So we say within the catchment area, 1 kilometer, you can get access to the station by walking. So that's number one. Number two, we are building 11,000 extra parking bays to allow to park and ride. So you can ride with your car and go. Then we have BRT and the normal bus services that have bus stops at the station. And then we have kiss and ride, where you can be dropped off by somebody and kissed if they like and take you to that. So we have four ways of getting to the station. So we have allowed for exactly that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other comments here?
I just want to emphasize on what my colleague, Mr. Clement, indicated, that it's also a NACMAP also identified that there's the need to restructure the movement of trucks on the road. That there is a recommendation that trucks will only be allowed between six. Trucks won't be allowed on the road during the day. So between trucks will only move between 12 a.m. and 6 in the morning to create flow of movement on the road. And this has been confirmed in China, where my boss was last week. He told us that for the 7 days that he was there, he hasn't seen a truck moving on the road during daytime. So there's always flow of movement, of transport.
Does this require a policy or a legislation?
Yes. It requires a policy decision, and it's some of the things that we said we'll start implementing on the phases, where we indicated that there's always fragmentation between policies in terms of legislation and institutional arrangements. So this requires, it will require police intervention from this house.
From the Portfolio Committee?
I think this will be our starting point. Thank you.
I think what we would require from the department is to bring to us a written submission that says these are the challenges and these are the required interventions from the portfolio side, so that at our own time we can then begin to apply our minds on that, because how we influence the situation in Parliament is sometimes through a motion or through a debate, or we propose a piece of legislation to be put in place. But if there is nothing that is written that says that this is the kind of intervention that the portfolio is required from the portfolio committee, we would not be able to move forward. Are there any other comments? If there are no comments, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the department for availing itself to present to us the presentations that we have for us, as well as thank the members for the participation in this meeting and the kind of questions that were asked. And I think that this is not the only time we are going to be discussing that, because there are issues that need a follow-up from our side, and also information that the department still needs to give us to clarify some issues. So it is an open-ended discussion. Honorable Disgrace and Honorable Fart.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Just on a different subject, I've been informed that there's an international transport conference, I don't know if you're aware, just happening just down the road. And were we not invited or asked, it would have been important for us to have been part of it. Apparently it's an international transport conference, and if I can see you're surprised, if if perhaps our researcher could find out about it and how it is that it's at the International Conference Center down the road in Cape Town. And apparently an international transport conference, and it just concerned me that we weren't aware of it. Would have been most interesting because apparently a large number of stakeholders were present. And perhaps, perhaps you could investigate how it is that we were overlooked. Thank you.
I also heard that, but I just wanted to ask if it's possible for us to have a site visit to the Gauteng project, a Gauteng project at some stage, to actually physically go and look at some of the construction aspects of it and, you know, talk to some of the people on the ground at some stage. I don't know now, but, I mean, we're going to have to find a slot here. But would it be possible, and if it can be consideration, thanks.
I can't remember from the top of my head what kind of a program we approved, but if it is it has got a study tour in it, there is nothing that would prevent us from doing that. But if we have already approved a program that doesn't have that study tour, it would be difficult for us to go back to the house chairperson and ask for that to be slotted in, because our progress is also based on the budget that we have. I don't know to be able to assist us in relation to the transport conference. Is this an international transport conference? Do you have any information on that?
The only conference that I know that started yesterday is the International Road Traffic Safety Management Conference. Road Traffic Management Conference.
That one did not invite the committee. They invited an input from the chairperson. And do you know who the organizers are?
The Road Traffic RTMC.
Is that the one you're talking about? Yeah, in Cape Town. The one that I know of is in Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
No, those are two different things then. So that one is related to the municipalities.
Yeah, most of the people who are attending are from the municipalities. Yeah,
it's arranged by one of our agencies.
But we were not invited, and we had last week. They were here last week. They never informed us about that, and we were dealing with issues of accidents. Can we find out when that is starting and when it is finishing, and if it is possible for members to attend? Okay.
Chairperson, I also know that next week, I think, there's a railway safety conference in Johannesburg, which is organized by the Railway Safety Regulator. So that's another conference.
Maybe we'll have to... Yes. Maybe what can be done is that when we get that information, we will then to facilitate maybe a situation of getting two members to go to each one of those so that we can get information. Thank you. Is that it?
Sorry, Chairman, Mr. Sumer, I'm saying that copies of the presentation that was done, you don't have in front of you, will be given after the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Sure. I declare the meeting closed.
Okay.
We forgot to consider the minutes. Yeah, the members can remain so that we can consider the minutes of the last meeting.
Go road accident fund.
Okay, we are now considering the minutes. The minutes of the meeting that was held. Can I close the door? Thank you very much. We are now considering the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 5th of August 2009. We are on page 1, page 2, page 3, and page 4. Can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Connor, thank you very much. We are now considering also the minutes of the meeting held on the 12th of August 2009. On page 1, page 2, page 3, and page 4. Can we have a mover and a seconder for that option? Thank you. Any seconder? Yes.
Women in transport. I think we need to spell that out. It's a new anagram.
Did we have a seconder? Thank you. Declare the meeting closed. Thank you.
I believe I'll
Yes. And then